Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Good evening and welcome to Walls in Our Minds. This is Terry Dodd, and I'm here tonight with a team of hosts, really. Doug Millar should be on with us live, and also Red Beckman will be joining us. I'm not sure when Red will get there. I believe he was out either running a roller tiller or a tractor and working on his PhD of post-hole digging, and I'm sure he'll be joining us here in just a few minutes as soon as Earlene is able to get a little food in him and get him on the line. Doug, was that you laughing?
Yes, out here, Terry.
Well, good evening, Doug.
Jim,
how are things?
Here too.
Hello, Jim.
Oh, things are going great in Alaska.
Gentlemen, I'm going to open us with a prayer, and then we'll see if our guest is online. Remember, if you're calling in, please hit a 1 to raise your hand to let our producer know you're ready for a live mic. But I will open us in prayer.
Yeah.
Almighty, powerful Father in heaven, we acknowledge you as the creator, the only source of truth in this world, the only one that can sustain us eternally, the only one that is self-existent. We thank you for giving us the rights that you've bestowed upon us, and we pray that you would give us the courage and the wisdom to defend those rights here in this mortal existence. We just ask you to be with us this night during this call. We need you in this battle, and we know that we'll be beating our heads against the wall if we don't have you in it with us. And we're thankful that you're there, that we can turn to you. We ask your spirit to fill us this night, to take control of everything we say and do, and may everything we do here on Walls in Our Minds glorify you. In the name of your Son, our Savior, Yahshua HaMashiach, we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Well, all right. Do we, Kate, if we've got a 907 there, give them a live mic so that we can get them introduced, find out who's online. Area code 907, you should have a live mic. Who have we got?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, we do. Is this Michael?
Yes, this is Michael Chambers. That's correct.
Well, good evening. Great. And welcome to Walls in Our Minds. Doug, would you kindly give Michael an introduction and start us out?
I sure would love to. Michael Chambers, I was referred to him by Maria Rentzel, who, of course, all your listeners know and my listeners know, the lady who's organized the campaign to help rescue and free Schaefer Cox. He's one of the top three people she referred me to in Alaska who could help not only Cox, but the freedom movement in this state and nationwide, and I can see why. I've had him on my show two or three times, I guess three times already, and folks, let me tell you, this man is one of a kind. And so it's my privilege to introduce Michael Chambers, who, Michael, would you please give people a little of your background as where you grew up and then how you ended up in Alaska and your professional experiences in not only education but in the business world and then political.
Certainly.
After that.
Well, thank you. Thank you for those kind words, Doug. To the listening audience out there, My name is Michael Chambers. I originally come from Salmon, Idaho. As fate would have it, that's exactly the same town that Dick Randolph, who was the very first libertarian ever voted into office in the United States. That's where he came from, too. In fact, my grandmother babysitted him. And in 1975, when I came to Alaska, I think in 1976, Dick Randolph actually had registered me into the Libertarian Party, and I've never been affiliated with any other party but the Libertarian Party. So I'm a pure libertarian for sure. I was drafted in the Army, went off to Vietnam, and then I spent 3 years in the military, and I got out of the military, and I traveled to Wilmington, Delaware, because my sister was living there, and I wanted to see the galleries and all the wonderful art, and I knew that on the East Coast was the majority of the art, because I've always been an artist all my life. I make my living as an artist today. And so I lived for 2 years in the Delaware area, and I had the opportunity to go up into New York and Boston and down into Baltimore and Washington, D.C., and just see the East Coast, the seaboard there of all the wonderful artists and the history of art. And then I applied to be inducted into the University of Colorado, and I got accepted. And so I served 5 years in Boulder, Colorado. I got 2 degrees there. I got a Bachelor of Fine Arts degree, and then I also got a teaching certificate there. And Terry was making a reference to I'm probably the only conservative that ever came out of Boulder. But coming out of Boulder, I maintained my conservative stripes, even though I had to snort tofu for 12 years. But I got over that because I was actually a vegetarian through that experience for 12 years. But when I moved to Alaska, I got the fortunate opportunity to be able to be drawn in a buffalo permit. And so I went out and shot a buffalo, and I found out that it's hard to maintain a vegetarian lifestyle when you got a buffalo in your freezer. So I taught for a couple of years. I got out of the education there in Boulder, and I taught in Delta Junction up in the interior of Alaska for 3 years. Within the third year, I became the president of the teachers union. I was recognized as the educator of the year there, but it just wasn't a good fit. Education's never. I loved the children. I enjoyed what I was doing, but the system just doesn't fit real well for a libertarian. So I started fighting for parental choice in education back in 1980, and I'm continuing that fight. And so I got out of there, and I came to Anchorage, which is the largest I should back up a little bit. My mother was a pipeliner. She was working on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and she convinced me to come to Alaska. And so September 15th, 1975, I came to Alaska, and I fell in love with the place, and I've been here ever since. So I came back in from Delta after my teaching, and I came into Anchorage, and I answered an ad in the paper, and I wanted to learn how to sell, because I felt that as an artist, I see a lot of really good artists, but they don't have an opportunity to be able to get their wares out, because I think that they're somewhat lacking in the background of sales. So I thought, well, I'll just pick up some sales skills. So I went in and answered a blind ad, and lo and behold, I found myself in the Kirby company, Kirby Vacuum Cleaners. And it was right during probably one of the most severe economic shutdowns that we've had here in Alaska, because it was right in 1985, and all the pipeline money had drawn up and dried up, and people, the papers were filled full of foreclosures, and the economy was flat on its feet. And I went into the Kirby company under those kind of conditions, and I just got all fired up. I got excited. I got in that back room, sang those Kirby songs, and went out there and wanted to clean up the world. And I went out and sold 33 Kirbys my first month, made over $10,000. And my distributor looked like at me like I was the second. He looked at me like I was the second coming of Christ, because the entire office was selling about 60 Kirbys a month. And so I got excited and stayed in Kirby, and I turned around one day and I was a factory distributor, and I thought, well, you know, what am I doing? You know, I didn't go into Kirby for a career. I went in there for the knowledge. And so after a substantial period of time of going in and out and everything, I finally just said, that's it. I laid it up, and I went back to my first art love, which is art and living in the fine arts. And so I did that for a good period of time. But so for like a lot of people, I went on political hiatus. I got filled with it up in Delta Junction running on this for the school board. And it was just, you know, I just like everybody, I just thought, you know, I just really don't like being associated with politicians or politics. And so I tuned out, like many people. And so probably about 4 years ago, I just decided, you know, I just can't do this anymore. I got to get involved. So I went off to Tea Party event, and I met a libertarian there, and we started talking, and I really enjoyed the Tea Party, but I just didn't like their structure. They had no structure, and I just didn't see them. I just didn't feel comfortable in a grassroots organization that didn't have any structure, even though I liked all the things that they were talking about. And so Chuck Green is the man that I met in the Tea Party, and he told me that they had some problems with the Libertarian Party, and that he wanted to drag me over. So he took me to convention like 3 years ago. I guess it's going on 4 years now. And I got over there and I got excited, and I got too excited, and they put my hand up and put me on the executive board. And so I stayed on the executive board in various capacities for 3 years. And then last year in April, I got voted in as the chair of the Alaska Libertarian Party. And then also in the meantime, back in not January this year, but January of last year, so a year and a half ago, I met with a very prominent citizen here in Anchorage. His name is David Cuddy, and his father actually owns the First National Bank of Alaska, which is a very large bank here in Alaska that has branches throughout the state of Alaska. And he came to a meeting that I had, and he started talking about basically about doom and gloom. He started talking about the financial destruction of America within the next 5 years, and that we needed to start talking about liberty and freedom and limited government and leadership. And, you know, I had always assumed that, you know, that we have leadership, you know, that we elect people and they're leaders of the country and they're leaders of the state. And he informed me that if anything happened on a financial level, that those leaders would run into the woods as fast as there was moose going across Muldoon Road here. So I had my meeting to attend. And then after about 2 or 3 weeks, I just got to thinking about it. I thought, man, that, you know, I was getting to a point where I couldn't sleep at night for what he said, because this is not just some person that walks off the street. This is actually a person that his father owned the bank system here in the state of Alaska, and his sister sits on the Federal Reserve. So I thought, my goodness, you know. So I asked him for another meeting. I said, I really have to meet with you. And so I met with him again, and he spelled out his vision a little bit more clearly. And excuse me. And I told him that I had to, I would have to, you know, have a meeting. I just couldn't do this. And so he said, well, yeah, sure. He was going to be out of town in the next 2 days. I immediately got on the phone and I called up everybody that I knew at that particular time. And I didn't know a lot of people because I had only been active for about a year. And so I called as many people as I possibly could through the Tea Party and through just kind of networked. And so the very first meeting we met at Dave Cuddy's house, actually 17 people were there, which was pretty amazing that I could call that many people together in that short a period of time. And so that was the genesis of United for Liberty. Today, what United for Liberty is, we're actually 20 different parties, associations, and affiliations of people around the state of Alaska. We're the largest activist organization in the state of Alaska. Our influence is growing daily. What our vision is we envision an America which It has less government and is much more financially efficient and expands the liberties of citizens. And so it is comprised of the Alaska Constitution Party, the Alaska Independence Party, the Alaska Libertarian Party, the Alaska Republican Party, the Republican Assembly, the Republican Women's Group, Oath Keepers, Citizens Initiatives, and 20 different organizations. So our outreach is approximately about 120,000 voters in the state of Alaska. And when you're looking at a population that's only 780,000 people, I would suggest that that's a substantial outreach for only being a year and a half. And so through that all, we just recently, United for Liberty just sponsored one of the senatorial debates. And this is one of the hottest Senate campaigns in the country. And we have now have the credibility whereby the candidate senators are coming to us and asking for organizational meetings, that they want to come and sit down and do sit downs with us, because they want our support. So I find that United for Liberty is growing immensely. I basically, what I say is that the left, the communists, the socialists, whatever you want to call those people over there on the left, they're really good at communicating. And what they do is they go out and they communicate with whatever they perceive to be victim classes. And they speak with those people and they encourage them to know that they are certainly victims, and that and then they sell them on their brand of politics that they're going to save them, that all they have to do is follow them into the pearly gates and they're going to save them here. And and they're very effective at doing this, turning people into you know, citizens that are need the government, or and that their first resort is the government, and handouts and things of that nature, just socialist communist dogma. And so I found that the other side of things, mostly the Republican Party, what they do is they get together and they form circular rings and they have firing squads and they shoot each other. And Karl Rove is a prime example of that, is that he has a substantial amount of disdain for the Tea Party and for Ron Paul Republicans. In fact, if Mitt Romney hadn't thrown the Ron Paul Republicans underneath the bus, he probably would be our president right now. So a lot of Republicans have a lot of miscommunication and dysfunction within the ranks there, and I just can't sit around and expect the Republican Party to carry the water on the conservative side of the equation anymore. And so basically what United for Liberty does is we bring these people together that are, in most cases, when you really look at their issues, what divides us is about 3 to 5%. On 95% of the things, we get along, and there's that 3 to 5%. So what I've encouraged them to do is to lay the social issues aside and look at the issues that bind us together, and to start those forming those relationships, and to develop those relationships in a meaningful way, instead of trying to explain to somebody who a libertarian is, actually sit down and talk with them and find out who they in fact are. I find that here in the state of Alaska, people are very surprised when they find out I'm extremely pro-life. Because they always think that a libertarian is two things. They think they're a Rastafarian that has an abortion clinic down on the corner, and nothing could be further from the truth than that. And so when they sit down and they meet me and they find out that I'm extremely pro-life, and that I'm really not interested in the free use of drugs, I obviously think that if I want to ruin my life, I certainly have that right as a libertarian. But I think that an honest libertarian gets their walking orders from the Bible, and I don't need no government to tell me how to dictate my morality. I'll use Jesus for that, and I don't need the government to tell me that. And I'm a responsible libertarian that knows that it's not good for me to use drugs because it's not a good thing to do. But certainly, I am not interested in incarcerating people because they're smoking marijuana and give them a rap sheet so they can't ever get a job the rest of their life. So that's basically in a nutshell. I can take any questions and break down United for Liberty in a more specific and substantial way, because I would certainly like to see it go nationwide. And I certainly have all the agendas and things of that nature and all the different kind of things that we talk about in United for Liberty, which I could be talking to you for the next 5 hours on just the issues that we address after we develop the relationships, and then we start addressing particular issues. One of them that I'm passionate about right now is I'm extremely passionate about that I'm going to be introducing United for Liberty. I'll be introducing legislation in the state of Alaska this next year to nullify the EPA. I think that the EPA has more to do with destroying the economy in the state of Alaska than any other government agency, and they certainly don't have the walking orders of the Constitution. So they're completely out of the jurisdiction of the Constitution. And here in the state of Alaska, I think Alaskans have always taken care of Alaska much better than the federal government has. And I would suggest to you that every single state that you're in, every single state, that the federal government is the biggest polluter in that state. And so for them to come and, breathe down our throat and tell us that they're going to clean up the environment, what they're basically doing is they're controlling human beings and our activity and our behavior. And in fact, like I say, they are the biggest polluters. So, to me, we certainly know how to take care of Alaska much better than the federal government does.
Well, sure.
I just want to say amen.
Well, thank you.
Michael, we didn't get too much chance to visit earlier, so we haven't really shared each other's vision with one another, but I have to tell you that I'm excited about getting to know you and sharing some ideas with you and seeing what you're doing, and I really want you to hear at this time on the show to kind of share some of the specific things that you're getting into. We don't have 5 hours, but we've got two, and I know for myself I would love to hear about it, but I've also got some ideas that I'd like to share with you. We don't need to spend your time on the show doing that, but I would like to talk to you about some key issues that I believe have to be put into play before we're going to get redress of any other grievances. And when this is done, Doug, I want to make sure we've got emails shared and all of that sort of thing, so maybe we can text each other with each other's emails so that we can correspond. Doug, did you have some specific questions at this point you had of Michael?
Well, yes. Michael, since Maria Rentzel, the NASA chair for Free Schaefer Cox, referred me to you, would you please tell people why, in your opinion, Schaefer Cox should be freed?
Well, basically, Schaefer Cox, the real bottom line with him is he was a young, articulate, bright person that had a tremendous amount of energy in him. And his major focus was obviously the Second Amendment rights. And sometimes people would think, well, gee whiz, in Alaska, why are you worrying about that? Everybody's got a gun. Well, we have the encroachment of the federal government and the United Nations and not so much the state government. The state government really does quite a good job in the sense of protecting our Second Amendment rights. But Schaefer was very, very instrumental and very vocal in up in the Fairbanks area. And Fairbanks is a hotbed of activism. And so he got excited, and he actually formed the Second Amendment Task Force, which is now throughout the state of Alaska. In fact, there's a very active organization here in Anchorage that pushes for legislation to protect Second Amendment rights and certainly holds candidates for office accountable to how they address the issues of Second Amendment rights. And a lot of this comes right directly from Schaefer Cox. He became extremely effective. He traveled down I think he went to Montana and Colorado and around in the various states, and he was drawing large crowds, and there was a tremendous amount of enthusiasm. And basically, when he became surveyed by the put under surveillance by the federal government, because they obviously they don't like a person of that nature that has that kind of a content. And I don't know a large amount about Schaefer Cox because I have so many other particular issues that I'm dealing with, but he certainly is a political prisoner. And he certainly was, he was set up by the federal government. You know, they got, didn't admit certain evidence into his trial, and it was a railroad job, and he's a political prisoner today, and primarily because it was he was a person that expressed his First Amendment rights. And, you know, so you know, just by virtue of having the right to freedom of speech, it's not that, that we do. We have the right to freedom of speech as long as we're saying the things that the federal government wants us to say. And he's a prime example of a person that they sequestered him for his First Amendment speeches, and they built a fabricated story with regard to, you know, the things that he was doing of, you know, blowing up judges and things of that nature in some kind of conspiracy, and they tracked him down and they captured him, put him on trial, and it was a kangaroo court, and he was convicted, and now he's sitting for, I think, 26 years he was convicted for, and he's sitting in federal prison for basically just being a citizen that wanted to get active and involved.
Well, that's a pretty good description
let me say
of
this,
it.
Right, for sure. So, Michael, as I've told you privately, Harry Cox introduced me to Maria Renzel and the Schaefer Cox movement. And so we helped give them some ideas, both Terry and myself, and, of course, Red Beckman. And so they've been implementing our ideas, and now they're moving ahead very fast, because to have the Terry is able to line up the executive director of the Gun Owners of America, Larry Pratt, and he's now supporting Schaefer Cox. And as I told you, Red Beckman wrote an ad for Schaefer Cox and put it in the American Free Press. And so we're now encouraging people to go to gun shows in every city and state in America, and let's build a movement around Schaefer Cox, because if we don't help get him out of prison, we and our loved ones will be next. Would you make a comment about that?
Well,
I
will say this.
Before you go any further, I'd like to introduce Red Beckman, who is on live with us and has a live mic now. Red, if you're muted, you need to unmute yourself. But Red has been running ads in American Free Press regarding Schaefer, and we've been getting some pretty good donations off of that. I'd like for Red to be able to say hello, but also anyone that wants to make a donation to the Legal Defense Fund for Schaefer Cox, please go to either freeschafercox.com or schafercox.com, and Schaefer is spelled S-C-H-A-E-F-F-E-R. So go to schafercox.com and please give what you can. The kid really needs support. He just turned 30. He's got a young wife and two young children at home. The feds ripped that family apart. There is no victim. There is no crime. What they trumped up on him were not even really violations of federal law, and they were operating outside of federal jurisdiction to start with. I will say, Michael, and Red, by the way, this is Michael Chambers. Michael is the chairman of the Libertarian Party and also one of the founders for United for Liberty, which is a growing organization unifying many of the conservative groups in Alaska. So that's who we've got on with us tonight, Red, Michael Chambers. And Red, would you like to say hello?
I'd like to say hello, and of course, with the I tuned in earlier. I was just finishing my dinner. I didn't get started on my dinner till five minutes before showtime. So I just put the phone on mute and finished my dinner, and that's why I'm a little slow getting here. But I heard what was said, and I think that, you know, there's some, this kind of thing could really help if there would be a real push to educate the people of Alaska about the power of a grand jury, a federal grand jury that has become informed and understand their responsibilities. And so I would hope that with the kind of response that they're getting up there, with the numbers that he is telling us about, there should be some contact with somebody on the federal grand jury up there. And if we can get to a federal grand jury up there, I can assure you that Schaefer Cox is going to be released, because there will very likely, there should be, some indictments of the judge and the prosecutor in Schaefer Cox's deal. And so, you know, the very idea that the feds would pay people to testify and testify falsely. They didn't tell the truth, and it was all designed to Shanghai Schaefer Cox. Now we have to bring to the attention of a federal grand jury up there the fact that these public servants that pulled this off, that they have a serious conflict of interest in anything such as this, because they are beneficiaries of the tax laws. And being beneficiaries of the tax laws, you see, that makes them they want to protect their big pensions, their health care. the federal government, Social Security isn't good enough for them. But there's millions upon millions of us out here that are part of the sovereign peoples of this nation, and we're supposed to get along with a lot less. But our public servants, when they retire, why, they have given themselves these fabulous pensions and all. And so a federal grand jury really needs to investigate the Justice Department and how they hired people to give false information. That's the way I got the picture, and it's nothing, it isn't anything new for them to do these kind of things. They are famous for doing these kind of things, and this has been just one of many cases where they have pulled this this game, and they've hired false people to infiltrate, and you might say just literally destroy from within, organizations that, are straightforward, they're honest people, they're people that are concerned about what's happening to our country. And and of course there's something that we really need to bear down on, and that is the fact that the oath of office that all the public servants take, I had to take it when I went into the service, we swore to uphold and defend the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic. None of us took an oath to defend the government. The government is something that these people in public service are, you see, they were trying to protect the government by pulling the shenanigans they did to get Schaefer indicted and prosecuted. If they had been, upholding their oath to defend the Constitution, they'd have been right in Schaefer's corner and giving him, all the encouragement and such that they could. And so we need to really bear down on this fact that it is we, the people. We're the ones responsible for defending the government if the government needs to be defended. And that's something that you just don't hear. It is we, the people, to determine. We, the people, are the ones who wrote that Constitution. And we are the most qualified to determine whether they are defending the Constitution from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And so with that, I better shut up.
That was a pretty good run. Michael, would you like to comment to that?
The only thing that I would say is there's also when you do these kind of things, like up in Fairbanks right now, it sets a climate for the entire population there in Fairbanks, because people are concerned about joining groups, joining associations, having their free speech, talking about the Second Amendment, talking about the Fourth Amendment, the violations that are in the Fourth Amendment right now. Because as an example, here in the state of Alaska, it's one of the very, I think there were six states that received grants from the federal government for drone technology, but there's not one bill in the state legislature right here that actually, in fact, protects us from all the things that drones could do in an inappropriate way. But up in Fairbanks, a lot of those citizens up there, when you outreach to them, they're gun shy, primarily because of the Schaefer-Cox issue. So it not only has an effect on Schaefer-Cox and that whole thing, but it has a cooling effect on the rest of the community up there, because they are reluctant to get out and do the things that good citizens do, and that is two things: is that come together, and the second thing is to redress the government with regard to the harms that are put upon us every day. And so my main concern is that I know the people in Fairbanks. I know what kind of people they are, and it seems to me like they've got a lid over the kettle up there with regard to people actively pursuing and getting involved. And so, it not only affects this particular case, but it affects the climate.
Indeed. Doug, did we lose you, or are you still with us?
Oh, I'm still here. I'm just enjoying the discussion here, because there's so many different issues and so many different opinions, and that's why, of course, I suggest that we have Michael on, because, you see, he's not a typical libertarian. He's a born-again Christian, and so I have a great admiration and respect for him, and, of course, Dan Cuddy. I've known Dan for, I'd say, about 36, 38 years, but I haven't seen him since I left Alaska in 1980, so I'm looking forward to meeting with him and discussing with, in a private meeting with Michael and other people who support the United for Liberty movement, how we can take this not just statewide, but also take it to Colorado first and help build a movement down there, and then, of course, take it nationwide.
Well, it's been my my thought for a number of years that the parties are a real problem, and we can't reinvent another organization or another party or, some group that'll be targeted or infiltrated. But this concept of uniting all the various conservative groups I find to be very attractive. And if they can cross party lines and support conservative candidates, for example, without if you've got a conservative running as a GOP candidate, or if you've got one running as a libertarian candidate or a Constitution Party, if they can get behind one candidate that's conservative and stop splitting the conservative vote, it could have a tremendous impact within a community or state. So I really support this concept, and I appreciate what you're doing. So talk to us a little bit more about that, Michael.
Yeah, I certainly will. Let me show you or talk to you about a unifying element. Unifying element is education. We're told that the greatest resource in the state of Alaska is the oil that we have up in the North Slope. And certainly it's important because it runs 85% of this economy here in the state of Alaska. So we certainly recognize and appreciate the resource of the state of Alaska with the oil resource. But our greatest resource is education. Our greatest resource is our children. And there is no more unifying thing than the fact of the matter is that the state does not own our children, that they're owned by the parents. And there's no greater cause than the parental choice in education. And I believe that across this great nation, every time that, as an example, they have a, NEA has a organization called Great Alaskan Schools. And so I'm opening up an organization through United for Liberty that's called Great Alaskan Students. One speaks to the institution and the other speaks to the creative nature of a person. You know, and so I'm fighting the good fight up here because we have a unique situation here in the state of Alaska where our constitution is a very socialist constitution. I don't like it, but that's what we have. But in our constitution, it says that the resources of the state of Alaska belong to the citizens of the state of Alaska. And so to me, the resources, the educational resources here in Alaska are the citizens of Alaska. But the problem is, just like everywhere else, they have the institution, the NEA, and public school systems, and they have that monopoly going on. Here in Alaska, it's gotten so far out of hand that we're up to $22,000 per student. It's more money per child in K through 12 than anywhere else in the world, and we rank number 39th in the nation. And in many cases, like fourth grade reading, we rank number 50th in the nation. So this is a perfect example of the stranglehold of public education on a system bent on just more money. We are spending right now in the state of Alaska $470,000 per classroom. And our administrative cost in public education is 43%. Now, I would suggest if you've got your own business out there and you've got an administrative cost of 43%, you're not going to be in business. You know, so I find a very unifying factor is having the options of education for our children. So what I'm doing here in Alaska is I'm pushing an education credit card, much like they have down in Arizona. Arizona is opening up, and I think this is their third year in that regard. But parents have an educational credit card that basically says if your child is up to standard in whatever those standards are that the community sets, that if they're up to standard, they have an education credit card and they can use it to diversify their educational approaches. Only 15% of the students in America now are going off to college education. And then you'll find that in almost every university in the country, 25% of those universities are remedial classes because the children aren't meeting the needs that that they need in order for entry classes at the university level. So they have remedial education there to get them up to a university curriculum program so they could start building on a bachelor's degree. So it's all just a financial thing that, you know, they could care less because obviously there's professors at the university that are being paid to do the work that they should have had done at the high school. But that's only 15% of the population. The other 85% are going into the vocational trades. And then as we know that when they get out of high school, they've got to go into these trade fields and they got to spend extra amount of money to get the specialty trades and everything like that. And I say enough is enough, that every parent should have every right to be able to determine if their child wants to go into the vocations around the fifth, sixth grade. And, you know, we start determining that those children do that. So when they get out of high school, they are certified as a plumber. They are certified as a carpenter. They're certified as technicians. And then if they want to go into the academics, they can go there too. But our education system across America sucks. We are, I think we're ranked number 26th in the world now. And I, Senator Begich came to Alaska, and he was arguing about No Child Left Behind, because he said, well, when they enacted No Child Left Behind like 7 or 8 years ago with George Bush and Ted Kennedy, that was, you know, a major accomplishment on a bipartisan level. And he said he can't support it anymore because we've gone from 24th in the world to 26th in the world. We're going the wrong way. And so I raised my hand, and he called on me, and I said, well, with that in mind, in 1977, when Jimmy Carter enacted the Department of Education, we were number 2 in the world, and I would recommend for you to get back to Washington, D.C. and dismantle the Department of Education. And that's a common thread. So there's an example.
Yes.
There's an example of the things that, you know, that's just one example that unites people. I think that the only recommendation that I would have throughout America is that you can't, it would be very difficult for you to find a Republican or a Democrat that could lead a group like this. Because if you have a Republican in there, then the people are going to say, well, it's partisan Republican. If you have a Democrat in there, you're going to have the same thing. I think I have a unique characteristic in being a libertarian. I'm not a partisan libertarian. And because of that, the Libertarian Party has some kind of problems with me in a certain way, because they think that I cozy up to the Republicans, or I'll cozy up to anybody that wants to talk about liberty. If a communist wants to talk about liberty, I'll cozy up them. You know, they're not going to co-opt me, I'm going to co-opt them. You know, so the bottom line is that it was United for Liberty, when you have this strength of that the founding fathers gave us, and the vision that they have there, that we're a free people and we live in a free land, and when we're on political vacation, so is liberty. And we can't do that. We've got to get actively involved, and we've got to reach out to our neighbors, and we reach out to our friends. We've got to light the fire underneath these people and cut through the apathy and get them down to these meetings and get them involved and get them excited and get them committed to these things. And then we can take back America and give it back to the responsible people that grew this country. We've got to get back to a level of self-sufficiency and responsibility. And the only way you can do that is you got to sit down with your friends and neighbors, and you got to be able to look across the table, and you got to talk to them, and you got to get away from that they're a Republican or they're a Democrat or they're a Libertarian. The thing that what makes me strong as a Libertarian is when I look at our party, it's more a party of issues than it is a party, then it's a Libertarian party. It's a party of issues. And my job, as an example, here in the state of Alaska, we had an abortion on our platform. Well, guess what? I got rid of it through the convention. So it doesn't exist there anymore. And we have a thing here in the state of Alaska where all members of the society, everybody here in the state of Alaska, can be a member of the Alaska Libertarian Party. So we control our party through delegates, but next year I'm going to introduce legislation within the Conference of the Libertarians that expected mothers and fathers can sign their fetuses up as proxy and be members of the Alaska Libertarian Party, and they'll be recognized with constitutional rights while they're in the mother's belly.
Well, Red, I'm sure he's inspired something as a response from you on that. I'm going to shut up and let you jump in there.
Well, you know, I think that the country is ripe for this activity because the people are so frustrated with party politics. Party politics is one of the great worst things that ever happened to the United States of America. And so I believe that, you know, doing the talk shows and such that I have recently, we have a different audience today than we had even just a year ago. And the difference between the audience today and the audience 10 years ago is just absolutely unbelievable, because people are recognizing that party politics is not about, you know, coming up with solutions. Party politics just gets us in deeper trouble every day. And so I think that there's a lot of people out there that they want to, they like hearing this, and they are going to watch it very close and see if it's something that they want to become involved in. And I think that as you know, as the politicians in Washington fumble around and play their games, there's just going to be more and more and more of our American, our fellow Americans are going to say, hey, we've had it. And so this concept of uniting for liberty is pretty generic, and I think that it's a great idea. At this point, I can see all kinds of potential for it, and so you know, my hat is off to the people that are doing these kind of things, because we're overdue. We need to see a lot more of this.
You know, and I appreciate that very much. So, and I feel very much that that way. You know, just Redby, just because I'm the chair of the Alaska Libertarian Party, I'm much more inclined to the issues than I am the party. And and because of that, that's one of the reasons why I have that opportunity to be able to reach out to these other people, and listen. And here's a couple of the outgrowths that come from that. As I indicated, the Tea Party, in many cases, they don't have organizational strength because they collect themselves as grassroots people. Well, about 7 or 8 months ago, they put forth an initiative to the city. That initiative was that the city employees could opt in or out of the union. If they chose to be in the union, they could. If they chose not to, and immediately when they put that in there, it hit the papers, and they immediately the news reporters got in contact with the Tea Party, and they were like, "Well, we really don't have a spokesperson," but they knew. They had to have a spokesperson. So what they did was they called me and they said, Michael, would you co-sponsor this legislation and be our spokesperson for the Tea Party? And I said, absolutely, no problem. So there's a good example of working together in a relationship. Also, the Republican Party up here in the state of Alaska is actually split in half. They have what they call the Republican Assembly. And then you have the old guard establishment Republican Party. And the Republican Assembly is the more, they're just the more, they're inclined to getting along and paying attention and working out and working with relationships. And so they asked me if I would come up to their first convention up in Wasilla, which was about 2 months ago. And I said, certainly, I'll come up. So I went up to the convention there, and then the chairman of the Republican Assembly asked me if I would address the group there. And there was probably about, I don't know, probably around 250 people. And I said, well, you know, I am the chair of the Alaska Libertarian Party. He said, I don't care. You're Michael Chambers. But I thought it was really nice that here we have these parties are breaking down. And they're breaking down because of the relationships that are established and being established in Alaska here. So why is that important? Because when I'm on a talk show, and let's say there's a caustic, which happened a couple of days ago, the person was taking shots at me,
he got so much crossfire the next day. The next day he went on the radio and he said, "Wow, man, I'll tell you what kind of a firestorm I started up there." Because I have so many broad coalitions out there that anytime they attack me, they're attacking them too. And they know that. But I want to share the mission and vision statement of United for Liberty, and I want you to listen to this and see, you know, how this fits in with everybody. Is our mission statement, it says, United for Liberty Alaska works together with various groups, organizations, political parties, and individuals to protect each other's right to life, liberty, and property. We serve as a think tank to develop, promote, and publish information and educational material that supports general interests over special interests. We highlight promising efforts across Alaska to incorporate these principles in law and public policies. We support candidates who embrace these goals. And then our vision statement says, our local, state, and federal government will once again prosper when we balance our budgets, provide for a sound currency, and insist that our constitutional rights are not infringed. This and the next generation will realize a higher quality of life when we replace government over-regulation with increased personal responsibility. We support real leaders who support all constitutional principles. We envision an awakened citizenry taking action to enable liberty and responsibility for each other and equality of opportunity for everyone, which reflects the very principles which our great country was founded. So those are examples. Now another thing that happens through United for Liberty, it doesn't matter how politically active you are. Once you form a group, once you form associations, once you form friendships, the information that comes back to you is substantial and profound. Many people have a problem with regard to associations because they feel one thing is if you have an association that there's always going to be some spy in the woodwork that's going to take the information and take it back to the enemy. And I'm saying there is going to be that person. And I'm saying that your principles should be so strong that it doesn't matter how many spies you got in the woodwork. I could care less. So, you know, for you to disassociate and to form your tight little groups because you're concerned that somebody's going to try to take your message and co-opt it someplace else, oh, well. You know, I don't have a problem in that regard. And with United for Liberty, what we do is we explore this in our knowledge and our understanding and our love for each other and our relationships that are growing are far much stronger than some weasel in the wood pile. You know, so, it says in the Bible, love conquers all. And you can't conquer anything until you come together and start loving and appreciating your fellow person. And if you're not doing it for liberty, then you're not doing it. So let me get to another issue. It's come to my attention very clearly that just recently that if in that the EPA is clearly acting throughout the entire United States to take full jurisdiction of the water rights. They want all water, want all regulation of all water throughout America. They don't want state sovereign nature and water rights and things of that nature. And what they're going to do is they're using the Clean Water Act to do it. But they consider navigable water the water that's running down the spout in your gutter. They're talking about every single drop of water. If you look at down in Texas just recently, they're taking jurisdiction of the Red River Valley, the Red River there, that has erosion every year, and it changes, the channel changes. And so they told those ranchers that they really don't own that land next to the river because it changes every year. They've been owning that land for 180 years. What the federal government is involved in and interested in is controlling that water because they know if they can control water, they can control us. And if they're telling us that they're going to take complete control of water, then I have to only ask you one thing, and that is how much of your body is the percentage of water? So the federal government owns like 75 or 80% of your person once they take over water. And they're moving very quickly and very swiftly to institute regulations of the complete control of water. We see it here in the state of Alaska. We're on the cutting edge of it. They are actually restricting us with regard to navigable water. They're actually expecting us to have permits to float navigable waters here. And it's the only place in the state of in the entire United States where the federal government is insisting that you need to have a permission slip to navigate water.
So this is Doug.
So that's another example.
My sister, Michael?
Yes.
Just interject here for a second because I've got to wrap up here in a minute, and I'll come back on without the program. We only have 1 hour. My sister, who was raised here in Alaska and has raised her children, grandchildren being raised here, the bottom line is, what is so odd is that they own frontage on a lake in Nikiski, which is in the Kenai Peninsula. And they were just told by the borough that they can no longer control the property from 50 feet to, from the lake. And they have less than a year to make any improvements they want to make, and then they lose all rights to their 50 feet. That's property confiscation, asset confiscation without due process. And so what's happening right here in Alaska, not just on the navigable places, but also on all water in Alaska. This is treason.
Correct. Well, it's happening everywhere. It's happening clear across America everywhere.
Absolutely. And I wish our producer, Dr. Kate, was listening, because you're now getting into one of the areas that she's an expert in. She's a hydrogeologist, and I just sent her a Skype message to say, are you listening? Because she was working on something else tonight. As a matter of fact, what she's working on is probably related to water. So she's been fighting that battle in Montana, and she's fought it in other places. And I wish she was listening right now. But we've also had Linda Besslin on, who Doug also knows, who's a friend of ours over in the western slope of Colorado. And they're seeing them starting to go heavy after the Colorado River. And and this issue of navigable water, people don't understand that any more than they understand how admiralty has been brought into our courts. These are some – talk about education and how few people understand this. We really, really need to gain an understanding of this and start to shut down the feds and – putting them back into their constitutional and jurisdictional boxes, because they don't have a right to be doing any of this stuff according to the authority they've been granted or the jurisdiction that they've been granted either. And people have got to stop calling this a nation. They've got to stop calling this a country. Alaska is a nation. Alaska is a country. Colorado is a nation. Montana is a country. But the United States is a federation. And these federal bureaucrats do not have jurisdiction in these areas. You know, the toxic currency, you mentioned the sound money. Well, I could give you, and I don't want to take up the rest of your time because I really want to hear what you've got to say. But we can draw a correlation between this toxic currency and what they're doing with the navigable waters, because it's basically the same thing. It's basically... with the toxic currency, they're putting a lien on everything, including us, because we're using their foreign product, these debt notes and debt credits on ledgers that are actually owned by a foreign corporation, and it's allowing them
Correct.
To bring the admiralty into our courts because we are conducting business with a foreign product. And
Correct.
This is deep stuff, and when we start talking about this stuff, we lose our listeners very quickly. So we really need to work on a way of educating the average guy, like Red says, get to the fourth grade mentality, because we need to be able to discuss these things in a way that the average Joe Sixpack or whatever can understand what we're talking about. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I completely agree. Are you familiar with it? I'm sure you're familiar with Agenda 21.
Certainly. We've had Tom DeWeese on here. Of course, we're fighting this battle a lot. We've had Kurt McKenzie on here as a co-host and as a guest on many occasions. It's not uncommon. He may be listening right now. For that matter. Kurt and Tom and those guys with the American Policy Center and Defend Rural America, That's a battle they're fighting on a daily basis. Agenda 21, the Endangered Species Act, the way that they're using that, the way that marine and fishery is abusing small and medium-sized businesses. You know, it becomes a kitchen table subject situation, and we've been trying to use that concept to say, okay, let's go where the people are hurting. Let's go see where they're attacking them. Let's, you know, look at those ranchers in Northern California and Southern Oregon and how they were trying to destroy the Klamath River and the hydroelectric dams and finding people $25,000 a day because there's a dead fish in their diversion ditches, or the Montana wolf situation. We're trying to take advantage of each one of those cases and use those situations to reach people's ears. Tend to be healed when they're feeling the pain themselves.
Correct. Well, here's an example, because in most cases, when you're talking about brothers and sisters, certainly I'm very, here's an example. If we took the concept of United for Liberty, and we had a United for Liberty Montana, and United for Liberty Washington, and Idaho, and Colorado, and Nevada, and it went through the western states, okay? If you look at every one of the statehood compacts, the relationship that you set up with the federal government upon entering into the state, they all have something in common. And one of the things that they have in common is in the founding principles, they say that you're going to come into the state on equal footing with all other states. Well, that is absolutely incorrect. And especially when it comes to land and the ownership of land. And I'm in a state that is the largest state in the union, and the private ownership of the state of Alaska is less than 1% of the land mass here. So clearly, a free person cannot be free without property. We don't even have the bathroom in the King's Castle up here. You know, so the fact of the matter is there's a common thread. If there was a United for Liberty in every one of these states, there would be clearly a common thread that the citizens could get behind, and that is the conveyance of land from the federal government, whereas the Constitution only says that they can have land in four manners, and those are very small. It's like military installations, post offices, dockyards, and then the administration of those other three. And that's it. That's all the Constitution gives them the authority and the right for. That land belongs to the state, and the state's, from my perspective, what the state's responsibility is to convey that land to the citizens, because that's where economy comes from. It doesn't come from the top down. It comes from the bottom up, and it comes from citizens being able to own their own land. You show me citizens that are expanding their land, I'll show you liberty that's being expanded. So that's a real common thread that I think that we'd find in a common bond as these organizations got set up and stood up, that we would have those issues that would come forth, and that the federal government would have to start paying attention, and we should have been fighting this fight since the Louisiana Purchase.
You talked about getting excited and raising your hand. I'm wondering if you've got somebody that's chairing this in the state of Colorado.
Actually, Doug's coming back to the state of Colorado. We haven't really. What I've done, because this only started last January, what I've done is I've worked diligently to get up our website, to get our organizations together, get them on the same page, to start that relationship, and to get our organizational foundational structure good. So now we're ready to start doing our outreach. Now we're ready to start reaching out to the different states and things of that nature, and taking our message beyond our borders, and then sharing all the good things that we have. You know, so because we, after a year and a half, I'm very active in that we have. It's very exciting in the format is because I meet once a month. I just call an open forum. generally speaking, there's anywhere from 50 to 100 people there, which is pretty amazing when you stop and think that, you know, you're just calling together a forum of people that want to get in, excited about taking back the government. And within those 100 people, those are those people that show up, they're the political activists of the state of Alaska. So when you're talking 50 to 100 people, you're talking some serious movers and shakers of political process. And so we meet, and generally speaking, I have an agenda that has about 13 items on it, 10 to 13, and they're hard-driven items. So I don't let people debate the items so much. We put them up. People say some things, but if they're a real hot-button issue, then I ask for a committee, and that committee is formed, and then they write white papers, and we develop a our situations, and then we go out and we go to the public library or whatever, and we rent out a gymnasium or whatever like that, and have the public come in and listen to positions that we take, whether it's nullification or statehood compact or drone technology or whatever, education, all those different things like that. So we're taking it and educating the public too. It's not just a matter of educating the activists. But so we bring those things up, and it's about 15 minutes, and then another one and another one and another one. And what happens after about 13, at the end of the night, it's usually about a two-hour meeting, and at the end of the night when we adjourn it, you have political activists that are wired up, fired up and wired up. And so then, they go on about their way, and for 4 or 5 days they're just vibrating like a tuning fork. And that goes throughout the community, and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And, people are coming on board. Our email lists are growing. But let me go over some of the things that we're dealing with. We have these are different committees. These are active committees that we have right now, and in fact, we've even expanded it more. We have the Second Amendment Committee. We have a ballot initiatives, very important here, committees that develop ballot initiatives, judicial reform. We have questions for candidates committee. So, they formulate questions at the local, state, and federal level. Drones and the responsibility of the Fourth Amendment, government reform, statehood compact, the United Nations agenda, nullification programs, education forum, private property programs, natural resources, jury empowerment, candidate forums that set up the different debates and things of that nature, replacing the IRS. Arming the agencies, that's a big one right now, because obviously the agencies are armed to the teeth, you really have to ask yourself why we have to have a military civilian agency that Barack Obama spoke about. Why the Forest Service has SWAT teams is beyond me. But the news cycle, we meet once a month, and these days the news cycle creates a lot of our agenda. Like, as an example, the Veterans Administration and voucher programs. That was just a recent one. Here in the state of Alaska, we don't have any counties, so I'm working on us having borough sheriffs, because we don't have sheriffs here in the state of Alaska, and every state should have elected officials, because the sheriff is the elected official that stands between the federal government and the Constitution and the people. And
you keep mentioning things that I was going to mention, so you keep bringing it up. Schaefer Cox may very well not be in prison today had his area, which should, either borough or county, whatever you call it, if they had a constitutional sheriff that he could have gone
That's
to
correct.
that could have held those federal people at the county line, so to speak. Schaefer
Correct.
may not be incarcerated today, because the sheriffs are fully capable of interposing and stopping
Correct.
Them from violating their jurisdictions.
That's correct. That's correct. And these are the things. These are the things that bind United for Liberty together. When you talk to about these organizations, and you start talking these different things, people get fired up. They get excited because it doesn't matter if you're a libertarian or if you're a Republican or if you're a Democrat. You're an American. You know, and these are things that are, you know, and we only got, and I don't like to be a doom and gloom person, but we only have about 5 years to turn this around. And if we don't turn around in the next 5 years, then, you know, then I just don't even know if we can get the boat turned around. I just don't know. And, you know, so to me, I'm going to give it my best shot. You know, 4 years ago, I was, like I said, I was hiding in the woods. I was just saying, I'm not going to do this. And what's happened to me in the last 4 years is phenomenal. I mean, David Cuddy got in touch with me. We have a very hotly contested senatorial race coming up, and David got in touch with me just the other day, and one of the Senate candidates wants to meet with United for Liberty, with a representative group. So when you've got some of the, you know, the Senate of the United States is the most powerful club in the world. And when you got candidates that are vying to be a senator for the state of Alaska to the United States, and they're coming to your organization, they want to sit down and they want to get your support. Then, and we've only been around a year and a half. I mean, these people are coming to us. You know, the radio stations are calling. I've got all kinds of people that, you know, they can't get on the radio. I could get on the radio any day of the week I wanted to. You know, because they want to get me on there, you know, and of course it's one way or another. They're either supporting me or they're going to go on there and they're going to drill holes in me. And, you know, and in fact, a couple of days ago I was on the radio with a very adversarial person, and a couple of people called me up and they said, you know, Michael, when they call you up, just ignore them. Don't go on those stations. And I said, no, I won't. I'll keep going back because I know something about myself, and that is every time I go in there and every time I get beat up, I get better. And the next time I go in there, I'm going to get better. And that's what happened to Schaefer Cox. He kept going to those meetings, and he kept getting better, and his voice kept getting larger. And I'm telling you, you have to grow liberty. And that's the thing about the United for Liberty. We can't sit around and wait for liberty people to show up. We've got to grow them. And that's what I'm doing up here. I'm growing liberty people. And, you know, it might take 5 years or 6 years or 7 years, but I'm telling you, it's happening. Because when, you know, I have all kinds of people throughout the entire society that are getting in contact with me. 4 years ago, they didn't even know me. They didn't even know I even existed. And it just shows you that a citizen activist, when you got your heart in the right place and you're led by the Lord Jesus and you have the right principles and things like that, and all you have to do is you get involved and you keep that love and appreciation for human beings and you take that to organizational strength, and I'm telling you, it'll spread like wildfire across America. And I'm telling you that United for Liberty is set to be an example of that. The reason why I have such incredible passion is, you know, I'm a professional artist. I make my life doing that, and I'd be more than happy for you folks to go to my website and take a look at my work, and I think you can see my passion in my work, my love for the state of Alaska. You can see it in my artwork, and that spills out into my love for America. You know, so I practice it every day, and the only way that I could do what I do in art, because when you open up my work and look at it, you're going to immediately say, "Wow, this guy is good." The reason why I was good is because I kept doing it. Every time I got discouraged, I got better. Every time I just got better and I got better and I got better, and I just take that to the political process, and I just refuse to say no. So obviously, I have to go into these, you know, legislative information offices, down to the city hall, down to, you know, conventions, to be able to, you know, to be willing to get up on the stage, to be willing to, you know, to take the voice of freedom and take it to the people. And you're just going to get better. And my medium is United for Liberty. It's, you know, the Alaska Libertarian Party, but it's mostly United for Liberty. So I encourage all citizens to get involved. The reason why America was founded with strong people is because at that time, oratory speech and all that was one of the things that, you know, people just expected, you know, that that citizens got involved and they could get up and they could speak their piece. And we've got to bring America back there. We've got to bring it where people will get up in front of people and voice their opinions and their feelings and thoughts. But it's up to me to provide them that forum, that they can get up and they can express their points of view, and that I can support those points of view, and that I can give them credit for that and appreciate them. You know, so I also, when people write papers, you know, if they write white papers or they do presentations in the public and everything, I always make sure within the organization that we give them gifts and give them things and show them how much we appreciate them and recognize them, because, you know, people want to feel good about themselves. There's nothing wrong with that. So what I do is I set them up to feel good about themselves. And what I want them to feel good about, I want them to feel good about an American. And so when they do that, then I'm the person that's going to give them all the recognition they can get, because I know a person that gets recognition likes it, and they're going to come back for more.
Where's your hidden buddy?
Where's my hidden buddy?
I'm looking at the Tangles area, and it says, look close for hidden buddy.
Oh, okay. On the to the left-hand or to the right-hand side along the line there. Or no, it's to the right-hand side. Up there, right at the trees there. You kind of slide along right there where the trees are, just above that water line.
Yep. Well, anyway, this website is...
You see that grizzly?
Alaskan, yes, I do. AlaskanArtist.ws. That's Alaskan with an N at the end of Alaska. N, Alaskan Artist. .ws, and you'll find some of Michael's art. Boy, that's pretty stuff. I might want an autographed one of those. yeah, that's spectacular, Michael. Any rate,
he's got various pages there. Yeah, no problem. No, you didn't interrupt me. I was on a roll. Obviously, you can tell I can get on a roll.
So these are actual nature pictures of Alaska?
Yeah, they're paintings. Those are paintings.
Yeah, I understand. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to use the inappropriate term there.
Yeah, not a problem. No, I'm versatile. If you go into drawings or if you go into the portraiture, you can see that I'm real versatile in a lot of other areas. But my passion is landscape. You know, so... And that's just one, you know, so I just, and so that, you know, it's just that love that I have for Alaska is the same love I have for America. And I express my love for Alaska in my art, and I express my love for America in my politics.
Well, Red, do you have any other comments for Michael or questions for him?
Well, I really enjoy. I'm just so glad you got a guest tonight, because I didn't think you were gonna have a guest, and so I'm just so glad that I found out that you were having a guest, and I made on a little late, but I got here, and like I said earlier, the political climate in this country. It's ripe. It's looking for a place to become involved in everything. And our guest has got the right idea, I think. And I think it'll work all over the United States. And I think it could just make a big, big difference. And of course. The one remark I need to make, and that is, there's so much out there on the internet and such, and they're telling about what's coming and everything. And I was just telling my wife today how that I look at these, I read these things, and I look at them, and I try to spot whether they have any spiritual values. That they're, you know, that they are promoting and that they are part of or whatever, and it's been I mean, there just isn't. I mean, there just isn't the spiritual values there that we really need to see, because what's happening in our world is being choreographed by our Heavenly Father. And you know, if you don't realize that, if you don't understand that, then you're going to be very you're not going to have these answers that you need to really be effective. And so my hat is off to our friend up there, and I don't think that this would have worked, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. I don't think it would have worked. But the way it is right now, the American people are frustrated. They are so upset, and they're unhappy. They're unhappy campers. It's time that we have this kind of activity, and I'm just pleased as can be. So I say, go get them.
I'm wondering if Doug got a live break. Indeed. Doug, are you back on with us live or not? Yeah, he's not. I'm going to see if I can get a hold of Kate and make sure she's giving him a live mic. He was going to call back in. Kate, if you're listening, he's probably on 907. So if he doesn't have a hand up, if you've got another 907 there, please open that mic. And, Doug, if you're there, make sure you hit the 1 to raise your hand. Well, Michael, we've got about 35 minutes left here. Tell us a little bit more about some of these special things, especially I know you started talking about ballot initiatives. Some of our counties here have been working hard to get ballot initiatives on, and right now we're trying to get one on GMO foods here in Colorado. How's that going?
We're actively engaged in ballot initiatives. There's two different ways of doing it. One, obviously, what I like to do first is attempt to work through the legislature, because if you can you build your relationships and your alliances through the legislature, because I don't know how it is there in Colorado, but in Alaska, with a ballot initiative, we have to have a certain percentage of the population from all the different districts in Alaska. And if you know anything about Alaska, these districts are way out in the middle of nowhere. And so it's expensive in order to get things on ballot initiatives. We can't just, collect signatures here in Anchorage. And they did that on purpose because, we kind of have a unique state here in that one half of the population is in one city. And so if they just had a requirement of a certain amount of numbers, we would have a tremendous amount of ballots initiatives. And so they put restrictions on us in the sense that we have to get them from all over the different states. So I find that in many cases, I work through the legislative process first. But if I can't get that, then obviously ballot initiatives go right directly to the people. So I don't know how it is in the different states down there, whether or not you have to get a certain percentage from each county or what to get on the ballot. But, there are things that you can drive on the ballot that legislators won't deal with. And GMO is a prime example of that because the legislators have been paid off. They're in most of them are in the pocket of big money, and GMOs are making gazillions of dollars, and so they obviously run around and pay the politicians off. And so if you look at an initiative like that, you pretty much have to put it through the citizens' initiative because it's not going to go through the legislature. So obviously, we look at those different kinds of issues like that where legislators won't touch them. Again, another thing that we have up here in Alaska is we got a real strong unions up here. This is not a right to work state. And so unions have a substantial grab on a lot of the ideas and the good government ideas, and so they have to obviously be driven through a ballot initiative. So what I'm doing through United for Liberty with that outreach,
the further we reach out and the further we reach out, the more effective it becomes at running ballots, because once you've got all your emails out there and you've got your contact people and you've got them, and this, you know, it takes a couple of years. And once you got that out there and everything like that, then you can divide them up into precincts and districts and boroughs or whatever you want. And then now you've got your people out there that, you know, can work initiatives, and you can actually be quite effective in the sense of doing that. But it all really comes down to, if you want to be effective, you've got to use the technology of today. You know, the reason why Barack Obama is the president is because he is without a doubt the greatest data president in the history of America. He won that entire election both times because he had the IT giants and the people working for him understood the data collecting and data mining and being able to reach people. It's the cheapest form. And it is a very effective form. And so, in order to be to have good organization like ballot initiatives, you have to have emails and things of that nature and contacts. So I don't go anywhere without my clipboard. If I go tomorrow, I'll be up in Wasilla, Sarah Palin country, and at the 4th of July, and I'll be there with my clipboard. And I'll probably pick up 100, 150 names and numbers and contacts. And it's relatively easy, you know, doing that because, you know, talking about freedoms and talking about the things that United for Liberty is all about. And, you know, so everywhere I go, I just pick up more names and numbers, more names and numbers. But one of the things is I collect names for United for Liberty, but I don't control all the emails because, see, I have like over 20 organizations, and I allow them to be autonomous. So, like, as an example, if we put out a bulletin, it goes to the administrators of each one of these organizations, and then they can choose to put that information out. So they don't share their information with me. I collect information, but they have their own membership. So their membership doesn't feel like, you know, they're being upstaged or anything like that. So they have their membership, and I send out an alert, and if they want to send that alert out to their members, then I have the potential right now of reaching over 110,000 people. But in many cases, maybe I only reach like 20,000 or 10,000 because maybe the alert only went out through two organizations. So, but it's real important to be able to understand technology and to use it to our benefit. And it's real important to whenever I want letters to be sent out, whether it's to the legislature or phone calls, whatever like that, the state, one of the strongest state representatives here in the state of Alaska that was very much in support of parental choice in education, we were trying to get our Constitution amended because I don't know if you're familiar with the Blaine Amendment, but we have the Blaine Amendment in our Constitution, which restricts funding. Yeah, so it can only go to public education, even though they're cheating. There's a lot of fudging going on. Basically, we wanted to vacate that so we could have options in the future. There was a tremendous amount of pressure and put forth with regard to NEA and you know, all the money that they have in the unions and things like that. To change the Constitution here, you have to have two-thirds of the House and two-thirds of the Senate. And we got just one senator away, and we were real close in the House, too. So we didn't get it this year. But my point being is that we'd put out a bulletin, and I would get in touch with United for Liberty, and I could make those phones, you know, just ring off the hook. I mean, I could find, you know, get one particular senator or representative, and I would just flood them with emails and phone calls to the extent that they'd be calling me back and saying, enough, you know. So that's one of the benefits of, you know, having citizens that are actively involved and engaged. And that's what I just ask them, you know, if they want to come into United for Liberty, it's an open forum, but I'm asking them to be active. That if I send out an alert and ask them to respond, they do. And so it happens. And so I can flood, just like this radio jockey that gave me a hard time a couple of days ago. The next day I didn't even say anything. I just sent out a
bulletin to United for Liberty to listen, and everybody listened, and they didn't like it. And so, I mean, the guy the next day, he opened up his program saying, boy, did I stir up a hornet's nest, you know. And, you know, so immediately, you know, a lot of times when you have the opposition like that and they immediately get response, then they back off. And so it's a very effective tool. You know, so, and, you know, bottom line is if organizations start getting going in Montana or Idaho or Colorado, I'd be more than happy to jump on a plane and come down there and, you know, and meet with people and help get the organizational process going. You know, so I highly encourage you.
We might need for you to do that.
I would have no problem. Yeah, I would have no problem.
My hand is up, okay? My hand is up.
No, I hear you.
So,
yeah, I'd be more than happy because, you know, I was born and raised in the West, and I'm a Western kid. I've planted myself here in the North Country. I'm certainly an Alaskan, but my heart's in the West.
We were thinking about using common law as a means of attracting more people to meetings. In other words, we're studying that element. We've got some in our group. We have a group called All States Organic Initiative, which has been working on trying to help people form boards of government review, kind of like a accountability oversight type groups that, you know, can make a difference in the grassroots and eventually
sure.
organize at the state level.
And
sure.
Some things are just simple.
I see that working hand in hand with what you're talking about, but we were trying to see where the real interest was, and one of the things we found is that there's a lot of people out there that really want to know how to stand up as a man or a woman and really defend their individual rights against this police state, and we found that there's a strong interest in learning about common law. And we thought about maybe holding seminars where we kind of mix it a little bit, where we give them a little taste of common law. We bring people in that are legitimate scholars in that arena that would help build the numbers faster. And I think what you're talking about goes hand in hand with that.
Sure. And I would agree with you, but I would tell you that, you know, what fires a person up, it's not, and I certainly don't disparage, experts in the field, but what really fires people up is a motivator. You know, you can talk all day long about education, but motivation is what gets them up out of the seats, you know, and, you know, to me, it's funny, like, as an example, I sell my artwork door-to-door. I don't go to any galleries whatsoever. I just knock on doors, and I learned that from the Kirby Company. And so when I first started, I used to take some of my pictures and put them in a smaller picture, and I put them on two sheets of glass, and I'd take it to the door, and I'd say, these are my examples of my work, and, you know, I got my big portfolio in the car, and I was wondering if you'd take a minute and take a look at my work. And they'd look at my work, and they'd say, I'm not interested. And so then I thought, I'll go and build a little tiny portfolio, like a little hobbit portfolio, and I'd take it to the door and I'd knock on it, and I'd say, this is my little tiny portfolio, but I got the big one in the car, and I'd like to know if you'd take a look. And they'd look at it and go, wow, that's really cool. No, I'm not interested. So then I learned how to knock on the door and say, and then I just say, yeah, I'm an artist here in Alaska, and I really like galleries, and I've got a portfolio. I was wondering if I could bore you with like a two-minute presentation. And they say, well, what kind of art is it? And I say, it's pretty. You want to look? And I found out the less information I gave them, the better off I was. And so, I don't mean that from a citizen's perspective, but I'm saying to get people down to some places, there are things that you do. One of the things that you do that's at your disposal is curiosity. Whenever I put something in the paper or put something around and I want people down there, I'm saying, boy, there's some fantastic things coming on tonight. You can't even believe it. You do not want to miss this meeting. This is fantastic. You won't believe what's going to happen tonight. And you'll double the people because human beings just love curiosity. You know, and you can't educate them unless they show up. So I use a lot of that kind of stuff. I also do things like, as an example, I tell the members, two meetings ago, I told the members, I said, well, next meeting is a membership night. And I said, I want you to bring somebody. I don't care who it is. If you bring somebody, I'm going to have a drawing for one of my prints framed. And, you know, and if you bring somebody, they get their name in. And if you bring them, you get your name in. And I had double the people there that night, you know, just for giving a frame printer away. That cost me like $30, you know, and I doubled the audience, you know. So, and we have a donation can there. So I picked $30 back up right out of the donation can. So. Wasn't even any expense. You just got to get enough people down there. And so you got to use all those little devices to get people there. You can have great educators there and everything, but the bottom line is you got to get people there. And you just got to get them curious. So you can drive certain issues, but sometimes people see those issues and they go, oh, but if you say, you give them some abstraction, like, boy, you can't believe what's going on in Alaska. Even that, you know, there's so many people out there that love Alaska. We're going to have a presentation on things that are going on in Alaska. Come down and find out. Man, that's incredible what's going on. You won't even believe this information we're going to share with you. And they'll go, man, I wonder what they're doing there. You know, and the people will show up. You know, so it's just interesting that human experience. I don't have any problem getting people to show up. You know, the real challenge is when they show up, then you got to teach them how to grow up. You know, so it's just, but you got to mix it up. You know, you got to have educators there. There's no doubt about that, and experts in the field. But you got to have those people that just get up and fire them up. You know, you just got to fire the people up. When they leave out of that room, you know, they got to be so fired up. I want them, I know whenever we have good meetings, and I try to make those meetings as good as possible, but I absolutely know because the next 3 or 4 days I'm just flooded with emails. You know, people are just fired up. They're just like, Michael this, Michael that, and blam, blam, and they're just, you know. And I ask them to develop the agenda. I always reach out to people. If you want anything on the agenda, let me know. I'll put it on the agenda. So I've got people all the time. And, you know, you got to be real careful with people that get highly involved because, you know, they want to talk too much. You know, they want to filibuster an idea or something like that. And so you got to kind of drive an agenda pretty quick. But, you know, it's all good. Once they participate and you put them on the agenda and everything, they, you know, they feel good about themselves and they get more involved. You know, and then they say that there's only 3%. In fact, in the Revolutionary War, there is 3% of the population fought the Revolutionary War. They say if you can turn on 3% of the population, you can control almost every political process in the state. You know, and so, you know, you're not looking for the big numbers. You're looking for the right numbers. You know, and if you get the right types of people there, it's just amazing what you can do. Just totally amazing, you know. And then you just gotta, you know, you just gotta. Man, I'm telling you, when people show up, I mean, I appreciate them. In fact, every once in a while, I'm not late, but we have meetings at 6:30. Those people are down there at like 6 o'clock. Sometimes I'm running a little bit late where I get in there at maybe 6:20. I walk into a room and people are like, they're fired up, you know. I mean, they're like, let's get it going, you know. They're fired up, you know, so it's exciting. It's exciting, but, you know, it really comes down to our love for each other. That's what it really comes down to. And if they know that and they can feel that and they can appreciate that, then they're going to come back.
It gives them a sense of ownership.
Absolutely. There's only two types of processes. I believe there's only two type of processes, and there's ego-driven stuff, and there's honor-driven. And if you're honor-driven, and you're driving that thing. An honor-driven person gives everybody else the recognition. And I'm telling you, when you're willing to set things aside, not take any recognition yourself, and give everybody else the recognition and giving them a sense of ownership, you've got dynamics going.
I agree. We've talked many times about the spiritual battle here on Walls in Our Minds, and obviously Red pointed to it a while ago. You've indicated that you consider this a spiritual battle by your own words here tonight, but it's critical, we believe, and I believe. I've got to the point where I'm really not willing to work with somebody who is not willing to acknowledge that there's a creator and that our rights come from that creator. If they are against talking about the spiritual battle, if they are not willing to include it for fear of running somebody off because it might offend somebody, I just don't want to work with people like that anymore. I think we're beating our heads against the wall if we don't recognize the need for divine providence in what we're doing. Can you address
Absolutely.
That?
No, I agree. I agree. You know, so to me, it's very clear. You know, it's like I say as a libertarian. Okay, I don't need the Libertarian Party to tell me what's right and wrong. You know, I could care less whether or not we have a ballot initiative up here to legalize marijuana. Okay, the Libertarian Party was against it, and the reason is because we didn't want legalization of marijuana because they'd take the tax stream and take our liberties away someplace else. You know, and but I really, as a libertarian, I have no problem with regard to the decriminalization of marijuana, and it isn't because it's a drug. I believe that, well, just like as an example, this whole issue that we have on the borders, okay, that has an awful lot to do with the drug wars. There's huge problems in South America and Central America because of the, elevated costs. But, you know, you have to educate people why they shouldn't use drugs. I mean, why do people use drugs? I mean, the bottom line reason why people use drugs is because reality sucks. Well, why not work on reality? And a major part of reality is having a spiritual base. The key component. When a person has a spiritual base, are they going to use drugs? It's going to be less likely. You know, it's going to be less likely. So, you know, the real bottom line is that, you know, you see, to me, the Lord gave me free will. You know, and it's my responsibility to him, the way that I use that free will. And so as a libertarian, I'm very cognizant of the idea that, you know, if you have the decriminalization of marijuana, are people going to use marijuana? Sure, they're going to. But as a libertarian, my responsibility is to teach them that reality is pretty cool. You really don't need to alter reality through the use of drugs. You know, so to me, I have a little bit of difficulty only in the sense of people that want to regulate me, you know, through some kind of a moral regulation, because where does that end, you know? I mean, I encourage people. My daughter's a Christian, okay? She's a devout Christian. In fact, when she was in junior high school, she went off to Wednesday sermons and Thursday youth meetings, and she went to church all the time to drive me, you know. I was like, man, I can't do that much church. You know, on Sunday I'll go to church with you, but man, I can't go out Tuesday night and Wednesday night and Thursday night. But she did. And I said, wow, what a gift. You know, what a gift that I've been given. The child's so spiritual that as a teenager that she wants to go out and be with Christians, you know, all the time. But, of course, you know, that's my responsibility. But I speak about it because I'm a single parent. I raised my daughter from birth. And she just, like 2 months ago, just got accepted into USC, which is one of the most difficult universities to get in. It's like $65,000 a year is the tuition, but she's got a full-ride academic scholarship. And so she's finishing up her baccalaureate degree, and she's going to be a doctor.
And I couldn't have done it. I didn't have her mother. Her mother passed away. So I just put an apron on God. I said, okay, here we go. You know, so, you know, is that how important is it that you have the Lord in your life? It is everything. And what does the Lord give me back? Gives me back my daughter. Gives me the people that I associate with. Gives me the opportunity to be able to speak with you folks tonight. Gives me everything. Gives me all my art. Gives me everything. Do I have to work for it? Of course I do. But everything comes from him. So, you know, obviously I know exactly what you're talking about. But I want people to go there because of the new covenant. You know, Christ said that it was the law that made us sin. I'm very much in the flavor of the Pentecostals, that I believe that the Holy Spirit lives inside me. You know, and so I think it's real important that if the Holy Ghost is in me and they live in me and they abide by me, then that I don't need that person next door to me to socially regulate me. I already am regulated. I have that in me. I have the Holy Ghost in me. And so I have no problem with regard to talking to people about that, about what that's about. Why should you have that? Because if you don't have that, you don't have anything. And I don't have a problem with that in public and in public process, in political process. But I agree with you. If people don't, if they don't, where are they going to get their passion? Where are they going to get their? Because the passion I have, it's not mine. It's borrowed. You know, so, you know,
we talk about the pecking order and the fact that the Creator is at the top of that pecking order. And everything our enemies in this battle, they understand who and what they are. They understand that they are enemies of our Creator, because they are doing everything they can to get him off of the top of the pecking order, because they want to be the gods. That's their goal, is to reclaim his creation. And if we don't understand that, we don't know who our enemy is.
Correct. That's correct.
Red, we got about 9 minutes. Would you like to comment on the pecking order, Red?
Am I muted?
No, well, you're live. And also, Doug, I believe you've got a live mic now. So after Red's comment, you're welcome to get any final questions in for Michael.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Red.
Yeah. I had to hit my button. I had was open mic, and I thought I was closed. And anyway, this is really a great show, and I think that we've been refreshed in our thinking. And of course, I've used that pecking order thing for so long. And, you know, it's really a thrill for me when I hear people that have picked up on it. So with that, I'll turn it back to you.
Doug, I know you've
can you hear me?
You probably had questions. Yes, we hear you.
Thank you. Okay.
Go ahead, Doug.
Well, thank you so much, gentlemen, for allowing us to have this two-hour program, because as you can see, Michael has a vision for America that we do, and that's why we do a simulcast every Thursday together. And so the bottom line is, Michael, you've been a real inspiration to me. Thank you so much for inviting me to be a guest speaker at your monthly meeting last week. And I hope that I get invited to your meeting. You mentioned a political candidate running statewide will be there in your meeting next week. Have you decided what date to have that yet?
Yeah, I think it's Wednesday. Yeah, it's Wednesday the 9th.
Okay. Well, hopefully I'll be back. I'm going to my brother's fishing site. I'll be coming back that evening. I just don't know what time, so I may or may not be able to make it. But anyway, I look forward to seeing, just to clarify things, Terry, I already talked to Michael about you specifically for Colorado as the best person to organize the state of Colorado with United for Liberty. And so this has been a nice introduction to give you an overview, and I'm sure that we can all work together to build a national movement out of Alaska and then Colorado. So with that, I'll thank you all and pass it on here.
Michael, you got 5 minutes for final comments.
Well, I just, you know, I certainly want to say that I definitely appreciate the opportunity to be able to come on and you know, give you a slice of Alaska and a slice of myself and a slice of, you know, things that are going on up here. It's certainly been nice to have Doug in and be able to, you know, interface with him on, you know, things that are important to him. I think ultimately we're all on the same sheet of music, and
right.
We are our brother's keeper. You know, and I think that it's extremely important for us to understand that, you know, we're not going to save America for the liberty and the limited government and the things and the freedoms that we want our children and our grandchildren to have without not coming together. And I think it's, I think ultimately, though, it's real important that we don't just come together and verbalize and, you know, have an exciting conversation with each other. I think it's really important to walk away from meetings with regard to having action points and to have people that are making commitments and that there's real progress happening, that there's real measurable things because, you know, you can find yourself in either teleconferences or you can find yourself in meetings with United for Liberty where, you know, you go down and that's exciting and everything, but 3 days later, then what? And if there's no real action items that you're working on, whether it's through the legislature or working through people or working on events or getting commitments from people to you know, to help each other out in the movement for liberty, then basically all we're doing is entertaining ourselves. You know, and I'm certainly not interested in just, you know, coming on and having a conversation and you know, with like-minded people and entertaining myself. I want to walk away with something tangible because the other side, you know, the people that are committed to the destruction of our country, they certainly have action items that they're working on a regular basis. In fact, they're real good at it. And so I think it's real important to be able to have a conversation, but I think it's really important to identify what are priorities. And I find that in many cases, the same priorities that are happening here in Alaska would be the same things that are happening there in Colorado and they're happening in Montana and Nevada and Idaho and Washington, Oregon, clear across the nation. There's a common theme. And but I believe absolutely, I believe in the power of the Lord. And I believe that the Lord has given, give us power to overcome evil. And but we can only do that if we activate and put forth and the more we activate, the more we communicate with each other, and the more we toss around ideas, and the more we focus and find out what are the priorities, and then hold each other accountable. That's a big one. You know, we can focus all day long, but you know, it's real important to be able to call and contact people and say, how you doing on that project? How's that going? What's happening here? What's going on there? Because once you're doing that, then you get results. And when you get results, then that's what, you know, that's the fire in the pit. You know, we're human beings. We have to have results. If we don't have results, then we get burnt out. You know, we get complacent. We start putting things off. You know, we just say, well, I don't know if this is worth it, you know. And so results are a very important thing, and you can never get results unless you know what results you want. You got to focus on, what do I want?
Michael?
Yes.
We're running out of time, and I want to thank you for being here with us tonight, but I also want to ask you if you would close us in a brief prayer.
Yes, I sure would. Lord, I want to thank the Lord for bringing us together tonight and for Doug bringing these good people to me and giving me the opportunity to be able to express my passion and my appreciation for each other here on this broadcast. I hope that I have the strength to be able to carry your word and to carry your word by virtue of having the love that Christ has and that you have for us, and to share that love with our fellow human beings and to help us. You know, Lord, that we're in a very difficult time, that we're being called on this mission because of our love for our country, a country that was founded on your principles, that were founded because of your love. That America is an exceptional nation because we kept your love for us exceptional, and we loved Israel, and because of that, you have shined on us. And I think that everyone in this group here wants to bring that glory back to you, Lord. And I ask that you put your hand on us, you guide us throughout the days and months and weeks and years. And if you want United for Liberty to be across this great nation, then assist us in that regard. But it's your will, Lord, and I ask that in Jesus Christ's name. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you very much. And good night, everyone. See you next week for Walls in Our Minds.